All right. Live from Cairo, Egypt, our guest tonight is Josh Gates of Expedition Unknown. And we're going to get straight to it right after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, on this gorgeous Saturday night here in Southern California. My guest tonight, Josh Gates. He is the host and executive producer of the new Travel Channel series, and it's called Expedition Unknown. The show takes viewers around the world and off the map for thrilling investigations into history's most iconic legends, blending Josh's unique brand of humor with his passion for exploration. For 5 years, Josh also helmed and co-executive produced the hit sci-fi channel series Destination Truth, regarded as one of the most innovative globe-spanning shows on television, touching down in nearly 20 countries each season. He was also the host of Ghost Hunters Live and is the author of Memoirs of a Monster Hunter. And tonight, Josh joins us live from Cairo, Egypt, and we're going to talk about his latest four episodes of Expedition Unknown called Hunt for Extraterrestrials. I would like to welcome, for the first time, I can't believe it, to Coast to Coast, Josh Gates. Josh, you've got me all tongue-tied tonight, man. What's going on?
I don't know. Maybe it's the UFOs. They're messing with your brainwaves.
It seems like you and I have been talking all week this week, and welcome to Coast to Coast. And I know that you're out there filming the next episodes of Expedition Unknown, and I do want to talk about that. But before we get there, 20 countries in a season. Most would call that insane. What kind of mileage are you chalking up with the airlines?
It's pretty hefty. I would call it insane too. I mean, that's one of the things about this show that is kind of a blessing, and also a be careful what you wish for aspect of the job, is that, you know, I have this amazing opportunity to go around the world and investigate these really great stories, incredible legends, you know, lost treasures and vanished civilizations, things like that. But those things do tend to take you to the end of the earth. So it is a lot of time sitting on airport floors, lamenting over canceled flights, and generally having to fly all over the world. So I'm complaining. I wouldn't trade it in, but it's a lot of travel.
Well, how do you explain the success of this? Is it because of your shows? Is it because that pop culture today is not believing about the world around them, that there are unanswered mysteries and there are conspiracies out there, and that we've got to get these answered? Are you part of that group? Is that part of the success?
I mean, I'd like to be able to tell you that the success of the show is entirely due to the host.
Right.
But I don't think that's true.
Right.
I think that the show resonates with people because they're great stories. You know, first and foremost, everybody loves a mystery, you know, and when you open the newspaper and you see some, or you click on a website and you see some little story about how somebody spotted some mysterious lake monster, you know, halfway around the world, or people saw strange lights, somewhere in the world, we all kind of think to ourselves, I wonder what really happened there. You know, that's a cool story. And I think that a big part of what makes the show work is that these are just compelling stories. I think the other thing that makes it work is that we kind of live in a world now where people feel like everything has been done and everything has been seen, and we've got Google Maps and every corner of the world is kind of known and we're all interconnected. And I think that one of the things that our show tries to show people is how much there still is out there that has never been found, that has never been discovered. You know, we work with these archaeologists and explorers on the show who are making astounding discoveries every single day. So I think that resonates for people too, because people, I think, want to believe that there are mysteries out there, and that makes life more interesting and exciting, doesn't it?
What? Of course it does. And for you, where do you find it most interesting? Under the water, in a cave, lost history, modern day conspiracies? What drives you?
I love, you know, all of the really incredible achievements of ancient civilizations. You know, I've been here in Egypt for the last week, working with different archaeologists at different sites, and some of the things that the ancient Egyptians built and the engineering that they accomplish is so kind of mind-bending that to still be making discoveries to understand how they did all of this is incredible, because there are things that ancient people did that we can't do today. You know, I just a few days ago was at a place called Silsila, which is a site that I had never really known much about, but it's one of the great ancient quarries of Egypt. This is where so much of the sandstone came from that they used to create a lot of their monuments.
Right.
And going to this quarry, you kind of get an idea of how they did it, how they got the raw materials out of the cliff. And it's something that I looked at and I said, okay, so what's this up here? They said, well, that's where they pulled an obelisk out of. And it's way up high on the side of this quarry and cliff. And you say, well, how did they do that? Well, they used ropes and levers and engineering. And I look at it and go, you know, if you gave me 100 years, I couldn't figure out how to do that. And so for me, I get excited about some of the incredibly advanced aspects of ancient civilization. I think that stuff is so cool.
When you go back to, you know, 2500 BC, you know, that's an incredibly long time ago, when there were no telescopes, there wasn't anything to study, you know, our galaxy or the universes or the, you know, our own solar system. But yet it appears today that there were celestial alignments and there was meaning to what the Sphinx, you know, the directions of some of these pyramids and the temples. How do you think that they got that done without any advanced technology?
I mean, some of that is the great mystery of it all. But I think that since the very earliest civilization, every civilization is pretty obsessed with the sky and the stars and the sun, because the sun is the thing that comes up every day. And without that, we're doomed, right? So everybody knew that. It was like, what is this giant glowing thing above us every day? So
right.
Everybody got an interest in the stars and in the heavens, I think, early on. But you're right. The degree to which some of these ancient civilizations were able to understand the heavens. I mean, Alexandria, Egypt is really where they first figured out the world was round. I mean, the fact that people could do that with any advanced instrumentation is pretty incredible.
If you today, Josh, here in Los Angeles, you live in LA with me, and you went and you're having a custom home built, and you tell your architect, look, I want the foundation of this to be perfect magnetic north and don't screw it up, and I want the foundation perfectly level to the known of everything, he would look at you and tell you that you were crazy.
Yeah, and I want it to last for 5,000 years.
Right. And by the way, right? But yet here we have this, you know, it's 480 feet tall. You know, it's a crazy huge structure where they got all of that done 4,500, maybe 5,000 years ago. It's something that can't be explained.
The Great Pyramid, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Great Pyramid is a showstopper. You know, I always joke about how there are things in the world that we've seen our whole lives on postcards and on television shows and movies. And then when you get up in front of them, some of them disappoint because you have an image of them in your head that's grander, you know, than what they are in real life.
Right.
Like the Mona Lisa is kind of a letdown, I think, because it's a really small painting. And in your mind, you don't really think it's this tiny thing, but it is.
Right.
You know, they've got it behind bulletproof glass and stuff. The pyramids do not disappoint. When you get in front of the Great Pyramid, it's bigger than you have imagined it to be. And as you walk toward it and you get to those blocks at the bottom, you realize some of those blocks are bigger than a single block is bigger than a person, taller than a person.
Right.
And when you look at its perfectness, it seems like an impossible thing. It just seems like something that today we would struggle to build.
Now, you know Giza pretty well. You're there as we speak. There is a lot of information out there, historical documents, that point to a fourth black pyramid out there as part of the complex. When you look around Giza, is there any evidence to you for a fourth pyramid or a second Sphinx?
Well, one of the things that's really kind of amazing about Giza when you get up to it is that, you know, I guess the only thing about the pyramids that is maybe a bit of a letdown is that it's not way out in the middle of these empty deserts. It's kind of in the middle of downtown of Cairo.
Right.
You know, you have Cairo, you cross the Nile, you get over to Giza, and then you've got this huge section of desert kind of flopped right in the middle of Giza. They've sort of built around it as much as they can. But you've got this massive the desert just sitting surrounded by city, and that's where the pyramids are. And we always see photographs of the pyramids, and we see just the three pyramids. We always see these same three pyramids. But in fact, when you go to Giza, there's quite a few more of them up there. There's actually nine of them. And there are smaller ones kind of around it and hidden behind it. You can see them sticking up. Some of them are ruined. And you see the Sphinx down there kind of, you know, aligned with the Great Pyramid. But one of the other things you notice is how much it's all still kind of covered. You know, there's so much excavation on that plateau that has never been done. And there's no doubt that if you started taking the sand down all over the Giza Plateau, you would find incredible things. Because when you look at it, it's clear that there is so much about that plateau that still has yet to be uncovered.
Do you think there's a way to get that done? Do you envision maybe some type of Expedition Unknown out there broadcasting like Geraldo Rivera? You know, let's vacuum all of the sand out live on air.
There is. I wish. I mean, look, here's the reality of Egypt. There is a museum here in Cairo, the big Egyptian museum. And it's like I always joke that it's like the Home Depot of museums. It's stacked to the ceiling with mummies. You could get killed by a falling mummy in this museum, right?
Right, right, right.
And it's this museum that was built, you know, 100-something years ago, and it's totally outgrown its usefulness. It's a beautiful building, but it's like stuffed to the gills with artifacts. Because, you know, there's more amazing artifacts coming out of the sands of Egypt than anywhere. So they've been talking about building a new museum out here for, I mean, I'm not kidding you, like 75 years. And now, and when I was here last time, 10 years ago, they were talking about building it. And now it's like partially built. It's taken them forever. And they're going to build this amazing new museum to house all this stuff. But it's taken, you know, the better part of a century to have a discussion about this, talk about it, and then actually start doing it. And who knows when the museum will even open. So things happen at a kind of steady, slow pace here in Egypt. You know what I mean? So I remember speaking to an Egyptologist here once who said, oh, there's so much here, not just that we don't know about, but there's things here we do know about. And it's, we just don't have the funding or the permits in place to do it. I mean, there's stuff under the ground they've already identified they haven't started working on. So things in Egypt happen at a kind of glacial pace sometimes, which can be frustrating. There's a lot of permitting, a lot of bureaucracy. You know, it's not, as people know just from watching the news of the revolution here, it's a place in flux. So I would love to be out there cracking open a new tomb on the Giza Plateau. I suspect that it will take a very long time for them to excavate everything there is to see.
How do they report on the recent finds there? Because yesterday the press releases came out about this 13th dynasty 67-ton sarcophagus that was just discovered right there. And was this in the newspapers in Cairo?
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. There was a thing on CNN yesterday, too, about some of the underwater ruins up in the Mediterranean,
right,
by Alexandria, where there's different teams that have been working there for a decade now. But, I mean, every time you turn around here, something else is discovered. And like I said, going to the Egyptian Museum, every nook and cranny is filled with these, you know, kind of mind-blowing artifacts. So it's a daily occurrence here in some ways. But there's so much of it that the big projects, the huge excavations, they just kind of move along at a slow pace, unfortunately.
Before we head to the break, I wanted to ask you about safety. After you brought up the revolution, is, you know, for tourists, and, you know, is it okay to go to Giza or to go to Abydos or Luxor? How do you feel about that?
You know, it all comes down to how you think of safety. I have to say, I think the situation here in Egypt from a tourism perspective is really sad. You know, I was here 10 years ago before the revolution, and it was really busy. And it's an absolute ghost town here. The pyramids used to see about 20,000 tourists a day used to come up to the pyramids. Today, it's about 1,000 people.
That's
it? You go to the pyramids early in the morning. That's it. You go to the pyramids early in the morning, you're the only one there. I was just down in Luxor. The hotels are empty. I mean, I stayed at a hotel down there that you would call a really good four-star hotel. It's $35 a night. That
wow.
The place is completely emptied out. There's nobody here. So people are staying away, you know. Now, I have to say, like, going to the main tourism sites, going to places like Karnak and Luxor and the Great Pyramids and on Abydos and all that, I mean, I think you're fine, you know. Having said that, there was a really terrible terrorism attack here yesterday where a bunch of armed militants killed more than 50 Special Forces police officers out in the Western Desert. Now, that's a place that no tourist would be going. But at the same time, you can't say, oh, it's perfectly safe here when 50-plus police officers got killed yesterday. So it really depends on how you look at it. I'm the kind of guy who says you could get killed crossing the street at home.
Right.
You get hit by a bus anywhere, you know. They're not blowing up tourist sites here, left, right, and center. I think it's totally safe here as a tourist. And I think that, the people of Egypt are great. They're warm. They definitely want the tourists back, you know. Safety is relative, right? It depends what you're willing to risk.
Now, are you suggesting that right now as a tourist, I could go to Giza, I could go to Cairo, stay there pretty inexpensively, but go and visit the Great Pyramid and probably go into the King's Chamber by myself?
Absolutely. There's nobody here, man. I'm telling you, it's bananas. I remember last time I was down in Luxor, I went to Karnak, this great temples of Karnak. It was like shoulder to shoulder, tourists everywhere you look. We went down there first light of day, right when it opened. I walked in the place, I felt like I owned it. I felt like I had it to myself. You know, there's nobody there. It's really, really incredible. I mean, from a tourism perspective, as a traveler, it's an incredible opportunity to go to these places and experience all this stuff without feeling like there's a million people around you and you're in some, you know, jam. But for the Egyptians here who depend on tourism so much, it's a tough situation. I mean, these guys are hurt.
Right, right. I would love to do that. Have you gone to the King's Chamber alone and jumped into the sarcophagus and laid down?
I haven't. I wasn't there alone. I was there with, we didn't manage to go in this time. We didn't have time. But last time I was here, I did it. And it is, going inside the Great Pyramid is, it's however impressive it looks from the outside, when you go inside of it, you know, it's not this huge, empty, cavernous space. It's all very narrow, tall chambers. And the architecture of it is all designed to distribute the weight of the pyramid. So
right.
There's this really funky architecture inside that looks about as alien as anything you'll ever see. I mean, it looks like something out of a science fiction film, some Geiger drawing of a spaceship or something.
Right.
The way that they distribute the weight inside this pyramid and the way the blocks are set up is so obviously mathematically designed and complex that it's hard to get your head around. But it is a really stunning experience to see it from the inside.
This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Josh Gates of Expedition Unknown. He's live from Cairo, and he's actually out there filming a couple of episodes that will be coming up on Expedition Unknown. What he's doing, we're going to find out about that next. But when we return, I've got to ask some questions. Scariest place, scariest thing he's ever done, most interesting, all of that stuff. Josh is fascinating, and we're going to do all of that next. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back. Great show tonight. Man, Phil Proctor in earlier, and right now we have Josh Gates live from Cairo, Egypt. But check this out. I want you to go look at this. An anomaly hunter studying Google Earth images of the ocean floor believes that he has discovered a pair of submerged pyramids right now near the Bahamas. The potential structures were spotted by, you know, prolific researcher Scott C. Waring, who says that he noticed them near the island of New Providence, which sits off the coast of Florida. Head over to coasttocoastam.com right there in the news section, and you can check out the video for yourself. Tonight, my guest, Josh Gates, live from Cairo, Egypt. He's out there filming Expedition Unknown, what he's doing, what's going on. We're going to find out all of that right after this short break. Stay with us. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM on this gorgeous, gorgeous Saturday night here in Los Angeles. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And you can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can follow Josh, actually, on Twitter at Joshua Gates on Twitter. But our little bumper music thing that I was doing tonight, Ingrid hit it first with the Guardians of the Galaxy theme. And I thought I was being clever by combining both Guardians of the Galaxy's films and getting the soundtracks in. Apparently, the audience is much smarter than I am. All right, Josh. What are you guys doing out there? Can you give us a sneak peek in Cairo?
We are still, yeah, we're doing a big two-part special here on mysteries of women of Egypt. So we're looking at Cleopatra and Nefertiti, which were two ancient queens here of Egypt that everybody knows, and also a few other characters that maybe people don't know, several of whom there are still some really incredible mysteries surrounding them. Cleopatra, the fate of her tomb is totally unknown. Nobody has found where she was buried. And there's a great debate about Nefertiti's body as well. And there's some thought that Nefertiti may be the mother of King Tut. So some really amazing mysteries here surrounding some pretty powerful women from the ancient world. So we're over here diving into that.
Now we're heading into, I'm going to switch gears really quickly. We're heading into, you know, the Halloween season. And I know that you've had a couple of opportunities where you've caught some anomalies, ghostish type of things on tape. What's your favorite example of it? I don't know if it's, would you call it proof?
Proof's a tough word for me.
Yes.
I always say I'm an open-minded skeptic, right? I mean, I love this stuff. I want to believe in all this stuff. But proof is tough. Proof is real proof. Scientific proof means all the boring stuff, right?
Right.
Repeatable results, a hypothesis we can test again and again. So I don't know if we're there yet, but I've had a couple of, I mean, more than a couple. I've had a lot of experiences that really made me question what I believe. You know, it's funny. I spent a lot of time over at Sci-Fi with the Ghost Hunters guys, with Jay Hawes and Grant Wilson. And one of the things that they always would say when they were hosting shows and talking to their team is they'd always say, you know, at some point when you go ghost hunting, you're going to get kicked, punched, slapped, kicked. They had this whole kind of, you know, spiel about that. And I used to always listen to them say that and go, man, that's never happened to me. I've never felt physically touched by a ghost. And I had one experience making Destination Truth. We were doing an episode on the Great Wall of China. There was this section of the Great Wall that was notoriously a haunted place. So we said, okay, let's go check this out and see what these people are reporting. And we used to wear these kind of goofy backpacks on Destination Truth, which were kind of a camera system that was basically had a couple of cameras strapped to a frame on your back, and then a big swing arm would come around in front of my face, and it would be kind of a look-back camera.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it was kind of goofy, but it would give the viewer kind of, you know, view at all times of me and my team. And so every hour or so, my camera operator, Evan, would come up behind me, and he'd have to switch the tape, the batteries and stuff, and he'd get kind of jostled around. And so we were standing there, and I felt, you know, Evan behind me jostling me around and kind of moving me around a little bit. And I leaned back to say something to him, and I was standing completely alone on this section of the wall, and he was probably 30 feet behind me talking to somebody else. And I felt like my blood drained out of my body because I felt moved. I felt like something had touched my back and shifted me around, and it was like I was frozen to the spot by this experience. I had no idea what it was, but that was certainly one of the most physical kind of experiences I had. We also had a lot of experiences where we saw strange things. We captured some incredible thermal images at Masada in Israel.
Right.
At Chernobyl in Ukraine, of what looked like thermal, almost thermal imprints of a person. You know, this fleeting kind of heat signature is just here and then gone a moment later. And those kind of things, you know, to me, you know, it's like, I don't know what to make of those. Those are really compelling bits of evidence.
A couple of months ago, the day of the eclipse, right, the total eclipse, I was speaking at an event for the eclipse up at Mount Shasta. No big deal there. But I'm hosting this event, and I don't know, I suppose there was probably 200 people that were sitting in front of me, the audience. And at that moment, somebody on my right arm squeezed my elbow, you know, like a
yeah,
like your mom if you were helping her down some stairs, right? Okay, you know, and squeezed my elbow, my right elbow, and I turn around to see, because I thought an audience member, somebody came up, they had something to say to me. Well, anyway, and it's on camera, right? You can see this. I spin around, and there's nobody there. And the people at the production team behind me, like 5 or 10 of them sitting at the lighting system in the, looking at me like, what are you doing? And I, what could I say? I said, did somebody just come up? And now I'm really, really feeling kind of stupid. But Josh, I'm here to tell you that, you know, when somebody squeezes your arm like that, you know it.
Absolutely.
It blew my mind. Blew my mind. And I just have to write it up.
I had the same experience. It was like completely in one moment you turn around, you get your equilibrium back, and you realize, wait, there's nobody here.
Right.
It really messes with you.
And I was speaking, and I was trying to then at that moment clear my mind from the, you know, the holy smokes moment, you know, back into focus mode, and I couldn't do it. Something squeezed my arm. I turned around, and there was nobody there. So there, I love it when it happens like that. Have you ever been, I know that you had your airplane incident, and I would love for you to share that again, but has a ghost, you know, an apparition, a vision, a sound ever scared Josh Gates?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, we've had lots of scary things happen on the show. We did an episode in, there's a place in Japan called the Suicide Woods, or the Suicide Forest. And it's a really spooky place in Japan that's become a famous place for people to end their lives. It's a really sad place, really. It's kind of like the Golden Gate Bridge got a reputation as a place for people to jump off of.
Right.
But there's this forest in Japan where people go to kill themselves. And it is also, therefore, become a place that's famously kind of haunted. And people go into this forest and see all sorts of strange things. And we spent a night in there. And that was a terrifying night for me because I had this horrible feeling the whole night. Forget ghosts. I had this horrible feeling we were going to run into somebody who had hanged themselves or something. You know, I mean, I just had this horrible fear that we were going to come across some real scene that I just did not want to see, you know. And so we were all on edge, and we had a moment. We were walking, and it's pitch black in there. I mean, there's nothing, no light. And it is a really creepy forest. Forests are funny like that. You know, the woods are, there's certain woods you go into and it feels like, oh, it's a beautiful, you know, slice of nature. And there's other woods you go into where you're like, this is terrifying. This is like some Hansel and Gretel creepy, you know, woods are funny like that. This is a forest that feels creepy. It does not feel like a good place to be. And we were walking, I had my flashlight and I looked up, and for just an instant, I thought there was somebody standing right in front of me. I just saw somebody right there. And I mean, I had to sit down. I mean, it was like terrifying.
Right.
You know, it absolutely made my heart stop. But then, of course, you start to say, did I see that? Because I'm on edge and I'm freaked out and I what I'm worried about seeing. Did my brain? Because the human mind, nothing's scarier than the human mind, right? Like, you can see stuff. Like, things, the human mind is not infallible, you know? So you start to get into that debate. It's the same thing with when somebody touched my back or when someone grabs your arm. The first thing you do is you say, could that have been something else? Was that my mind? Did a muscle spasm? You know, what did I really just feel, or what did I really just see? But man, it shook me up. It was really scary.
With all of the things out there that are unanswered, and for you, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. What's the one expedition that you still haven't done that you want to go and do?
There's a lot of them, actually. You know, we have a kind of a bulletin board of things you want to go and investigate, and there are some stories up there that have been up there for years, and it's just always a question of timing or permissions. You know, that's the hardest part of the show, is that, you know, it's especially Expedition Unknown, is that we're often working with governments and universities and archaeologists, and it's about creating those opportunities and being able to work with them to do these shows. So sometimes it's hard to manage all that. You know, there's a famous kind of cryptozoological creature down in Australia, the thylacine, or the Tasmanian tiger. This is a real animal that existed. It went extinct, but people still see it. Man, we were talking about doing a show on that 8 years ago on Destination Truth. We never managed to do it, but we did it last year on Expedition Unknown. So I've got a whole list of shows like that. I'm sure you know about there's a really creepy story about the Dyatlov Pass in Russia. This
Dyatlov,
where a group of hikers, died camping out in the middle of nowhere. We've always wanted to go out and do that story. It's a tough place to get to. The weather is not, you know, it's a tough window of time to get there. But a really scary story about these hikers that were found dead out in Siberia decades and decades ago. Things like that are still high on my list. I've still so many countries in the world I haven't been to. So, I mean, there's a kind of endless list of stories we want to do and places we want to go.
What about Antarctica?
We've been there once. You know, every year on Destination Truth, we used to create kind of like a dream list of places that I wanted to go where I knew they would say no to me. You know, we kind of got our ideas together, and then we'd have to march up to the sci-fi offices and say, okay, how about this one and how about that one? And they would either kind of just say, sure, that sounds like a cool story, go ahead and do it, or they would say, no way. And every year I had a pile of stories they would always say no to. I always wanted to do a ghost hunt in one of Saddam's palaces in Iraq, you know, some big abandoned Hussein palace. And every year they were like, what are you crazy? We're not letting you go, you know, to Iraq and go do that. And I would always put Antarctica on there. I said, I always want to go do a show on those really creepy abandoned whaling stations and science stations. And there are these great ghost stories of people seeing down on the ice there, you know, people, just mirages of people down there. And so every year we'd say, let's go to Antarctica and do the world's most remote ghost hunt. And one year, I don't know why it happened, but one year the big boss there said, yeah, sure, that sounds cool. So we it was sort of like a be careful what you wish for thing. We then had to figure out how to actually get down there and do it. But it turned out to be one of the coolest things I've ever done. I mean, Antarctica is a place that is so incredible, so remote, so beautiful, and also spooky. I mean, it is, you are alone at the bottom of the world. It is a really, really unsettling place in some ways, but also just a really magical place.
Now, these next, these four episodes that are currently airing for Expedition Unknown, called The Hunt for Extraterrestrials, first off, what would you like to say about it? And second, and what did you come away believing?
Sure. Well, I've always been into the question of extraterrestrials, like I'm sure so many of the viewers listening to this show. You know, it's I think it's mankind's ultimate mystery. You know, it's a question of, are we alone in the universe? It's that, and what happens after we die, right? Those are the big questions. So I grew up as a sci-fi geek. I grew up glued to Star Trek and glued to reading great sci-fi books. And so I always loved this stuff. And in the news over the last few years, it seems like there's this kind of gathering momentum of stories about exoplanets and possibly habitable worlds out there. And of course, there's this steady stream of sightings, of people coming forward saying that they're seeing things here on Earth. So I thought, let's go around the world and talk to these people, talk to scientists, talk to eyewitnesses, and get the kind of current heartbeat, get the current pulse of really where we're at with this question. So it's a big four-part special. You can find the first three episodes, which have already aired online. You can go to travelchannel.com and be directed to it that way. The finale is going to air next Wednesday night at 9/8 Central. The finale is great. It sort of shows up a lot of the questions we've asked in the first 3 hours. And it's a big global hunt. And so for me, it was a passion project because I think it is really such an important and fascinating question. I just really wanted to go do it.
Well, it's one thing because it's a mathematical situation. Of course, we're not alone in the universe. That's just an impossibility. But the other question is, are we being visited in the past? Are we being visited like right now? And are they among us? Have you answered those questions for yourself?
Sure. I mean, look, when you say obviously we're not alone in the universe, not everybody believes that. I think if you had said that 20 years ago or 30 years ago, people might have looked at you and said, I don't know, man, I think maybe we are alone. That's just pretty rare. If you'd said it a couple hundred years ago, they might have burned you at the stake. So this, but I think you're right. And I think for me, the thing I came away from first and foremost is totally believing that it is impossible now that we're alone in the universe, because they're finding these exoplanets, which are just planets outside of our solar system, right? If they're finding these planets now at an alarming rate, daily, they seem to be finding these things. And these planets, many of them, seem to be in this kind of sweet spot, in this Goldilocks zone, where there could be the right amount of gravity and the right amount of, you know, conditions to have an atmosphere and air and water and potentially life. So I think having spoken to so many of the brightest minds in the world on this show and traveled around talking to these scientists, you know, the NASA, which are some of the great telescopes, one in South America, one here in the U.S., you know, there is a consensus now among these guys that, yeah, we're not alone. It's a mathematical, almost an impossibility at this point that we could be the only game in town. That, I think, for some people is still a huge revelation. I think that you have to make a kind of a seismic shift in your mind, which is like, yeah, you know, there could be right now on another planet somewhere two guys talking on the radio about something else and about their show looking for people here on Earth. So that's a big revelation, I think, for some folks still. But I'm convinced.
Now, well,
the second question is the thornier one, right? Have
they
been here?
Right.
And that's the stickier one, because you've got some really compelling stories. You've got people who have amazing video, they have amazing photos, and they have amazing personal accounts. And I met some of those people. I wanted to go and meet people who've had these experiences. And some of these people, and I know you know this, you've been doing this a long time, some of these people, when you meet them eye to eye and you talk to them and you hear their story, it is so clear they've been through something. It's so clear that they've had an experience, a real experience of some kind. And that's where it gets really interesting, because now you've got a mystery, right? This guy went through something. This person saw something. What did they see? And so for me, that's what this show is all about. It's like, can I explain away what this person saw, or am I left with a kind of unsettling truth, which is this person saw something. This person is not out to make money. This person's not selling T-shirts or writing books. This guy wasn't drunk. This person was, you know, it's a clear, sober account of something really incredible. What do you do with that? How do you explain that? In a lot of these cases, you can't explain it away. There are a lot of these cases where you can't just say, oh, this was something else.
And for you, we've got about 15 seconds left, Josh. And again, I want to thank you, and I want you to have safe travels coming back here to the States, and stay safe out there. You know, your little thing about what happened with the police 85 miles south of Cairo is pretty frightening. But really quickly, what would it take for you to go from, you know, skeptic leaning on believer to aliens are here?
I think what it would take for all science, it would take repeatable results. It would take in the flesh, you know, something we can test again and again, which I think I guess is to say it would take them being here out in the open and saying this is a real thing.
Until
then, there's always going to be a debate.
That's what I'm talking about, Josh. And never change, my friend. Be safe out there, and we'll talk to you when you get back here stateside. That's Josh Gates, Expedition Unknown, live from Cairo, Egypt. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We're going to take your phone calls next. This is Coast to Coast AM.